our culture, the kind of mind, body, spirit culture, the kind of re-enchantment which people say is going on at this particular moment. We're then going to look at some kind of brief cultural stuff about ways in which I think that we can positively engage with that culture of mind, body, spirit. And then finally, we're going to focus specifically on this one festival in Manchester city centre. But along the way, I'm just going to give you a few stories about the kind of thing that you'll encounter at one of these mind, body, spirit fairs. And also along the way, there's going to be places to stop and you can wrestle with some of the things that I've wrestled with at these mind, body, spirit festivals, because they're complex places. There's lots going on. And I guess I'd like some people to bounce ideas off and to share thoughts with about certain things which are happening in these spaces. I mean, firstly, Mind Body Spirit in Manchester is atypical. It's not like most Mind Body Spirit fairs. The one in Manchester gets 11,000 people visiting it over 3 days. It's the only one. It's the largest one in the north of the country, and the one in London is the one which Johnny was referring to. It's a partner of Mind Body Spirit Manchester. In some ways, I think the small local fairs are much better places to be, where you get a consistent clientele through each week, where you pay a small amount of money for the stand, whereas these ones are kind of big commercial places that you pay a lot of money to be at. But that's kind of on the side. So I just want to give you a quick example. Just there's this stall at Manchester Mind Body Spirit Fair, and they sell stones. And you pay for the stone, but you don't actually get to take it away with you. And what's special about these stones is that people who are on the stand will take that stone, they will, I'm not sure what the language is, charge it with positive energy. They'll then take this stone and they'll bury it under a pylon for you. And the idea is the negative energy, which has been created by electricity, by man, by that kind of thing, is counterbalanced by this stone. And the idea is that under all the pylons in the UK, eventually there'll be one of these stones which bring a sense of balance back to creation and back to order. And I was kind of wrestling with this and thinking this through and thinking, what are these people going on about? And I guess what I always need to remember is some of the bizarre things that Christians have also said to me, that God has told them to do. So before I kind of make any judgment on what other people are doing, I need to look at the strange practices that we've got as Christians first. So some of the things which I'll mention tonight are slightly, they're quite bizarre, they're quite strange, but we should remember the strangeness within our tradition as well. So just a brief straw poll. You may be aware of the kind of re-enchantment or secularisation debate which seems to be on all the time. Are we going through a process of re-enchantment, or are we moving to a greater secularised society? And just a brief straw poll would be quite interesting. Who, if you have to nail your flag on one mast, who goes re-enchantment, who goes secularisation? So, re-enchantment people, put your hands up. Okay, and secularisation? All right, so we've got a kind of re-enchantment swing. I think I'm in the re-enchantment side of the equation, but I kind of wonder whether it's just one another manifestation of secularisation. But I'll touch on that a bit later on. So let's just look at the wider picture. The BBC commissioned a survey, The Soul of Britain, and this is quoted a fair bit about the changes which are happening in the country from a move from as people go through this process of re-enchantment. In 1990, about 54% of people said that they were religious. By today, that figure's down to 27. And what is significant in that is that 31% of people now call themselves spiritual rather than religious. And there's been a significant shift from being religious to being spiritual. And of course, part of the problem is us as Christians are seen as religious people rather than spiritual people, and hence church figures are suffering, etc., etc. The other interesting thing on this is a low number of agnostics and also an even lower number of atheists as well within these statistics. 26% of people believe in a personal God, 69% believe that we have a soul, 25% believe in reincarnation, 62% believe that Jesus was the Son of God, and 29% have felt a presence of the sacred within nature. I guess those are statistics that you may well be aware of, and I think they're quite fascinating. I find this one even more fascinating. There you go. Okay, these are beliefs or practices within the New Age movement, and this is percentage of people who've tried them. So, alternative medicines, 39% of people have tried. Prayer, 41%. Meditation, 22%. Now, in the book God is Dead, Steve Bruce's book, he brings in the other side to this, which you don't often see when people are talking about mind, body, spirit affairs. And that's the importance of living, of that practice when living in everyday life. And you can see the significant difference between those who have tried it and who find this important. Obviously, there's a big drop as people have tried these things, but they're not really that important for them. And as this is where I start to struggle with the re-enchantment secularisation debate. And I wonder if me, as a Christian, is reading these statistics through the worldview of Christendom, through a Christendom worldview. As I view these, I say that devalues that, if that makes sense. Because I expect people, if they try something, if they come to church and it's important to them, I expect them to stick with it and stay part of it. But that's not the culture of the New Age movement. In a culture of pick and mix, it is an authentic expression of faith for people to be picking and mixing different things. That's an authentic expression of faith in a postmodern culture. And I think it's perhaps wrong of us to put a value statement on that, to judge people for having pick and mix spirituality. There's a guy in Manchester City Centre who I've worked with occasionally. He's called Alistair Vera. He's part of the Western Buddhist Order in the Buddhist Centre in the City Centre of Manchester. And he was sharing with me his great frustration that he'd get loads of people signing up for these meditation courses. And then after about 6 weeks or so, they'd start to drop off. And for him, he would expect people to come along and be committed and stay committed. And as soon as there was an expectation put on that person, they'd start to drop out. And I just wonder whether that's just a natural manifestation of what faith is like in a postmodern setting. That's one of the things I wrestle with. Is this okay? Is this just an authentic expression of faith? The re-enchantment idea, there's a professor at Chester University who's written this book, Re-enchantment of the West, and he's placed Steve Bruce within there and says, yes, we are going through a process of re-enchantment. And what Chris says is that the first characteristic of contemporary re-enchantment to note is that this is not a return to a previous way of being religious, but rather the emergence of new forms of spirituality and new ways of being. And Chris will say that is what's going on in contemporary British society at the moment. And there's some characteristics within that which we come across at the Mind, Body, Spirit Fair. Firstly, that you are God, you can be God. Secondly, the influence of Eastern religion. Thirdly, faith and progress. And finally, that spirituality sells. And just picking up on that, this fate and progress thing, we ran a service at Sanctus One in Manchester a few years ago, and a couple of people came along who were from a kind of a New Age background. And the service was about chant and the role that chant plays within our faith. And what we were doing is there'd be six different spaces within the church. You got a dice and you rolled it, and whatever it landed on, you went to that space. Now, the people from a New Age perspective didn't like this in the slightest. They thought it was all ordered out. There was no such thing as chance within faith. It was all pre-ordered. And they were really wrestling with this. And it's just fascinating to think what our relationship as Christians with faith and chance compared to that with New Age people. So what's going on? Are we going through this process of secularisation? Or is there a great degree of re-enchantment going on at the moment? And I guess I like to think of ways in which that we can kind of make a judgment, or at least some judgment upon what is going on. I'm also cautious that as a Christian, there's a great danger to kind of sacralise these sociological forces, to say that, wow, this is the greatest opportunity that we've ever had as Christians, and to sacralise it, say this is of God. I've heard people call the New Age movement a great move of the Spirit of God. And I'd want to question that and say, well, what is this? There's a danger of sacralising that which is the kind of in sociological force. But I guess there's some ways in which we can judge or what's going on within wider culture. And I guess one way, one of the secularisation theories was that faith had become privatised and it became less and less important within public life. I just want to take us back to the Green Movement and look at how that has its roots within kind of eco-pagan spirituality. And this kind of bottom-up movement has influenced government policy, has influenced so much within our everyday lives. So gradually, this kind of secularisation thesis, which pushed faith to one side, is being undermined by things like the Green Movement, which are growing of people's interest in eco-spirituality, or that have a strong link with eco-spirituality. I guess also when I reflect on my partner used to be an Arts for Health worker as part of a healthy living project in just over near Liverpool. And in this project, there was her, she was an arts worker, there was a sports worker, there was a healthy eating worker, and they did the kind of typical things to get people healthy, and there was also a complementary therapist worker who worked as part of that team, a team financed by the council. And a complementary therapist worker offered Reiki, reflexology, Daoying Tao, Bowen, Drew Yoga, aromatherapy, stress management, meditation, and relaxation techniques. So gradually, these things which were marginal are being financed by government, being financed by our taxes, and becoming mainstream. People are engaging with New Age spirituality on a variety of levels. Another friend of mine who smoked for years and tried to give up, then she went to a hypnotherapist and gave up like that. Another New Age therapy which has influence and is gradually influencing our lives more and more. The next thing, which I guess is another example of what's going on, is what Chris Partridge calls a culture. Now, if you've got this, which is a Bible Society's the Bible in Transmission thing, there's a debate in there between John Drain and Chris Partridge. And John doesn't like Chris's use of the word a culture because Christians will run a mile from it. And what basically a culture is taking that word occult and broadening it out, making it broader than just things satanic and things of the devil, and taking it to include all things New Age, so Reiki, reflexology, everything which has a link with the New Age, Chris includes in that occult phrase. And he says a culture is those things within society, within culture, which are influenced by the New Age movement. And he says that this is another example of how the New Age movement is influencing everyday culture. And you just have to think of that awful book. What's it called? The Da Vinci Code. And how much kind of Gnosticism, how much New Age spirituality was in that book. And millions of people have read it. Then you look back, the Celestine Prophecy, 5, 6, 7 years ago, another book infused with New Age spirituality, which was kind of, people were engaging with and really enjoying. So these books are around, and a culture is quite a significant event at the moment. I'm going to shut up for a minute, and I'm going to put on a piece of music. And the piece of music's by Sinead O'Connor, who is an absolutely fascinating person. And it's it's Sinead O'Connor, A Massive Attack. And the song is called Prayer for England, and it's another example of a culture. Hopefully this will work. And I've got the text up on there. I think Sinead O'Connor is absolutely fascinating as a kind of embodiment of what New Age spirituality is about. I would just love to meet her and quiz her and find out exactly what's going on in her head. Jah is a reference to the name of God commonly used within the Rastafarian religion. Rastafarians considered Haile Selassie to be the religious symbol of Jah incarnate. And it seems over the past few years, Sinead O'Connor has really tied in with this kind of New Age spirituality, picking a bit from a kind of Rastafarian culture. Now, if you go back 14 years, in 1992, Sinead O'Connor famously tore up a picture of the Pope on live TV in the States. After that, she seems to have gone through quite a kind of significant spiritual movement. And in the year 2000, she was ordained Mother Mary Bernadette O'Connor into a neo-Catholic sect. And she had this kind of theology that love would solve everything. Here's a quote from her. "I see compassion as a means of universal and personal salvation. I'm not so defensive now. I constantly make an effort to be loving in all my answers." As well as her ordination, she's come out as a strange sort of lesbian as well. She said in a recent interview that she preferred sex with women, although she was celibate and sometimes she liked sex with men as well. So she's kind of quite a bizarre mix of what's going on. But I think this kind of level of pluralism within New Age spirituality is quite common. Okay, I'm going to shut up for a little bit and let you have some questions. A kind of discussion around the table. And this is what I want you to talk about. I was at Mind Body Spirit Fairs. You come across people who will do past life regression and soul travel. Now, what past life regression and soul travel is someone will take you and they'll put you into a deep trance, a deep meditation, and they'll take you back to your past life. If you remember that percentage of people who believe in reincarnation, they'll put you in this great trance, they'll take you back to your past lives, and then you'll deal with any bad karma, bad energy from your past lives, which are affecting you now. So that's something which goes on within this kind of whole soul travel area. The other thing that people do is astral project. But what you do is you go into these deep, deep trances, and you have the out-of-body experience, and you leave your body, and you find yourself traveling to the moon or to the other side of the world, and all sorts of things. I thought, this is absolutely fascinating. And then, a few days ago, I was reading in Acts with Philip and the Ethiopian. And what happens with Philip and the Ethiopian? After he baptizes the Ethiopian, Philip disappears. And he goes somewhere else. And I think, well, what's going on there? Is Philip experiencing an embodied version of soul travel back 2,000 years ago in the Bible? What's going on there? So talk about that. But also talk about other examples of a culture which you can identify in surrounding culture. I've given you Sinead O'Connor. Also, I've touched on the Da Vinci Code. But just kind of chat that through and anything else you want about what I've said already, and then come back to me with thoughts, questions, and that kind of thing. Okay, has anyone got any thought, other examples of a culture, or whatever else you talked about, and also what is going on with Philip, or any other comments? Anything? Yep, I was just wondering, I was kind of reading these two things together and thinking. Other thoughts?
I
Let me just read you something. This is from Paulo Coelho, who I think is probably the most famous one, was The Alchemist a few years ago. This one, by the River Piedra, I sat down and wept. And a lot of Paulo's books are full of kind of New Age ideas and thoughts. So I say this is another example of a culture. The sound of our footsteps echo from the stone walls at the entrance to the church. I instinctively dipped my hand in the font of holy water and made the sign of the cross. I recalled that water was a symbol of the goddess. "Let's go in," he suggested. We walked through the dark, empty building. Saint Savin, a hermit who'd lived at the start of the first millennium, was buried below the main altar. The walls of the place were crumbling and had clearly been reconstructed several times. Some places are like that. They can suffer through wars, persecution, and indifference, but they still remain sacred. Finally, someone comes along, senses that something is missing, and rebuilds them. I noticed an image of the crucified Christ. It gave me a funny feeling. I had the impression that his head was moving, following me. "Let's stop here." We were before an altar of Our Lady. "Look at the image. Mary with her son in her lap, the infant Jesus pointing to the heavens. Look more carefully," he said. I studied the details of the wooden carving, the gilt paint, the pedestal, the perfection with which the artist had traced the folds of the robe. But it was when I focused on the finger of the Christ child that I understood what he meant. Although Mary held her in his arms, it was Jesus who was supporting her. The child's arms raised to the sky appeared to be lifting the Virgin towards heaven, back to the place of her groom's abode. The artist who created this more than 600 years ago knew what he wanted to convey, he commanded. Footsteps sounded on the wooden floor. A woman entered and lit a candle in front of the main altar. We remained silent for a while, respecting her moment of prayer. When the woman had gone, he spoke again. The artist knew the great mother, the goddess, and the sympathetic face of God. "You've asked me a question that up to now I haven't been able to directly answer. It was, where did you learn all this?" Yes, I had asked him that, but he'd already answered me, but I didn't say so. "Well, I learned it in the same way that this artist did. I accepted love from on high. I allowed myself to be guided," he went on. "You have to remember the letter I wrote you when I spoke of wanting to enter a monastery. I never told you, but in fact I did. I immediately remembered the conversation we'd had before the conference in Bilbao. My heart began to beat faster. I tried to fix my gaze on the Virgin. She was smiling. It can't be, I thought. You entered and then you left. Please tell me that you left the monastery." "I had already lived some pretty wild years," he said, not guessing my thoughts at this time. "I got to see other peoples and other lands. I had already looked for God in the four corners of the earth. I had fallen in love with other women and worked in a number of different jobs. Another stab. I would have to be careful that my others didn't return. I kept my gaze on the Virgin's smile. The mysteries of life fascinated me. I wanted to understand them better. I looked for signs that would tell me something, that someone knew something. I went to India and to Egypt. I saw the masters of magic and of meditation, and I finally discovered what I was looking for. That truth resides where there is faith. Truth resides where there is faith. I looked around the interior of the church, the worn stones fallen and replaced so many times. What had made human beings so insistent? What had caused them to work so hard at rebuilding this small temple in such a remote spot hidden in the mountains? Faith. The Buddhists were right. The Hindus were right. The Muslims were right. And so were the Jews. Whenever someone follows a path of faith, sincerely follows it, he or she is able to unite with God and to perform miracles. So Paulo's books are full of kind of New Age ideas, New Age spirituality. It's just throughout them, and people are reading these. And whether we agree with them or disagree with what he's saying, the fact is that it's there. And these are things which are selling. People are wanting to engage with spirituality. If a film's released which deals with the occult or with spirituality or whatever, The publishers, the film producers know that it will do relatively well. Look at the success of things like Buffy and Sabrina. All those kind of things suggest that at least there's a level of fascination within humanity regarding spirituality. So I just want to move on and look particularly kind of cultural correlation. And here's a clip from Moby, which is I quite like.
In the early 90s, I had a reputation for being a rigid moralist. And maybe I was more so back then, but now my perspective is as a live and let live perspective. You know, if you talked to me 12, 13 years ago, I really felt like I was right and everybody else was wrong. You know, I was a vegan Christian dance music enthusiast, and I didn't drink and I didn't take drugs, and I felt like I was, you know, the most upright, moral citizen of the world. And then I realized that I was really just, you know, an anal, annoying, pretentious jerk. And that appeared in my mind so many times that, you know, I had to relax a little bit. And I realized, you know, the world is a big, complicated place, and I'm inherently distrustful of orthodoxy. And I'm very distrustful of anyone who thinks they've figured things out with other people. The world isn't complicated for anyone to really figure.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time in the early 90s where I was really into kind of aggressive, loud, fast dance music, and I felt like everybody should agree with me. And if someone didn't like loud, fast dance music, they were wrong. And then, you know, I've gone through periods where I thought culturally I had figured things out. You know, I thought, if I want to make a punk rock record, you all have to listen to it. And now I realize that it, you know, being rigid and shoving things down people's throats is not necessarily the most compassionate way to proceed. And there's nothing wrong with trying to learn from other people and perhaps being more tolerant and more accommodating of people. And not even from a sort of patronizing perspective, but realizing that other people have a lot to teach.
I think Moby's another person who's absolutely fascinating. But as we reflect on kind of mission and evangelism within this context, it's also interesting to look at Moby, who, as he says, 12 years ago, had this kind of really quite rigid fundamentalist agenda. And he's gone through quite a significant journey. And how he talks far more about listening to the culture, listening to what people are saying, engaging in dialogue. And as I reflect on Mind, Body, Spirit, and as John was saying, 10 years ago, people used to stand outside these places and protest against them, not go into them, saying that this was a place of the devil. Now perhaps that there's some things inside Mind, Body, Spirit fairs that we need to listen to and that we can learn on. Now my thinking for this draws from, it kind of builds on Paul Tillich's correlation theory, which I'm sure a lot of you know. Tillich's correlation theory took the questions that culture was asking and giving the answers of the religious tradition to these particular questions of culture. Now there are some major problems with correlation theory. So Don Brown and David Tracy produced this thing called revised correlation theory, where they recognised that this was a two-way process and that there were answers and questions in both. So firstly, rather than seeing theology as a process of correlating questions raised by culture to answers raised by religious tradition, a revised correlation approach envisages a more complex conversation involving questions and answers from both culture and tradition. And secondly, is the belief that contemporary culture and the New Age movement can be a mediator of truth and goodness in its own right, and that contemporary culture can generate insights that require us to challenge or revise ideas that have been part of our religious tradition. So is there some glimmers of God in the New Age movement? What can we learn as Christians by this fascination that there is with the New Age movement? I guess we've subconsciously within Sanctus adopted this approach when we've been at Mind, Body, Spirit fairs. Firstly, because I think there's a level of inclusivity within it. It recognises that we're in a dialogue We're in a conversation. It stops us going in with an arrogant mindset of we are taking God into this place, recognising that God is centripetally present in that place already. And I guess the second reason that we've adopted it is because of the complexity of relationships that exist within a revised correlation theory. And then it's not just a one-way street. There's two things going on. There's a dialogue happening. And that's why we've adopted it when we're in that context of mind, body, spirit care. Where are the glimmers of God within that context? Where can we engage? Where can we be in dialogue with those people? I guess I want to just move on to talk specifically about Manchester Mind Body Spirit Fair, and just to let you know how I first got involved. I was contacted by a guy about 3 years ago who Christian Scripture Gift Mission. Do people know them? They decided that they didn't want to go to Christian fairs anymore. They try a New Age fair, so they paid for this stand, 700-800 quid, and didn't have a clue what to do with it. So they contacted myself and Steve at Church Army, and we started talking about what we would do in that place, and gradually we got more and more involved. And I guess I need to also take this back a few years to who here was at, I think it was an Anglican conference in evangelism in 1999, where John and Olive Drain spoke about the tarot cards. Do people know this? That I'll just touch on one of the cards. John told a story of a guy called Philip, who's a principal of Theological College in Sydney, Australia. He went to a psychic fair, saw people all queuing to see the tarot card readers. This guy, Philip, got a packet of tarot cards, had a look at them, and realised that there was Christian messages within these tarot cards, and started sharing faith through them. So this one here, the main one, we've got the symbols of the Gospels, the lion, the eagle, the man and the ox around the four corners. We've got Yahweh written around the centre, Hebrew name for God. And as John was sharing this with us, I was like, wow, there's all sorts going on that I didn't know about. Perhaps within the New Age movement, there are glimmers of God. How can we tie in with this as Christians? So I was quite inspired, so decided to get involved at the first opportunity. I'll whiz through these. What I think is also fascinating is some of the things at the background here. We've got the tree symbolising the tree of knowledge. We've got the tower. We've got the tower symbolising where humanity lives. We've got the mountain somewhere symbolising the place of God. And if you take Rublev's icon of the Trinity, we've also got the tree, the mountain, and the tower. So the symbolism is in, you know, the most famous Christian icon of all time, and it's also within tarot cards. We should be able to make that crossover between the two. When we were at Mind Body Spirit this year, Radio 4 came along, and they interviewed us, and they just did a short piece about the context. So I'm just going to play you 3 minutes of that, so you get a feel for what it's like.
I mean, good behaviour, or perhaps positive karma. The producers let me out of the office to explore the 10th annual Mind Body Spirit Festival in Manchester. The GMAC Centre is an exhibition and concert venue that often fills with the sound of live rock music. But on Saturday afternoon, I found it coming to a different vibration.
There's an eclectic mix of stalls here, beautiful brightly coloured candles, mixed with pink crystals, a large statue of the Buddha over there, and any number of different therapies, from Reiki to angel therapy to sound healing. Well, Carl Briggs, this is your talk. What do you do?
Sound therapy is a way we practice of just using the voice, just using a basic ooh sound, and we work with a combination of breath and visualization, just encourage clients to relax. We just make gentle tones around them. So we're using the vibration of the sound to work with the natural vibration of the body.
So if I had a problem, say, with my heart, would you put your hands on my heart, or what would you do to fix it?
Personally, I prefer to work hands-free. So what I'll do is just invite you to take a few gentle breaths and close your eyes and relax. And then I'll just kind of tune in and find a note that feels right for you. And so then I'll make the sound. And you'll find that there are certain resonances. if I get it in the right position, then the sound just around you sounds really beautiful. You actually can't tell where the sound is coming from. Go on, try me. Okay.
Radio 4 interviewing a few people at the Mind Body Spirit Fair. Just to let you know what we do there, we have a stand which is 3 metres by 2 metres, and I guess my experience of Christians at Mind Body Spirit Fair broadly fall into two categories. You've got those who are more influenced by kind of the alt worship side, and those who are more kind of tied in with a more charismatic approach. Our style is more on the alt worship side, and I'll touch on the charismatic approach later on. But we kind of, around this stand, 3 metres by 2 metres, have different kind of prayer installations for people to write a prayer, drop a stone in a bit of water, that kind of thing. And we did that the first year, and that was just set up, and it was going okay, it was all right. And then someone with us had a sign, as you do, which said free healing. And we got this sign, and we thought, well, everyone else is offering healing. There's psychic healing, there's Reiki healing, there's all different sorts of healers. So we'll put this sign up and see what happens. So we put this sign up saying free healing. And we were just praying with people all day long. People come in, we chat with them, we'd hear what they'd say, something like my chakras are out of balance or my energy levels are low or whatever, and we'd chat with them a bit further, and we'd discover that they're having problems in a relationship, they're having problems at work, something like that, and then we'd pray for them about that. And this year particularly, I've really discovered that as you chatted with people and listened to people and spoke with people, that people just wanted to be listened to. And then the prayers were simply just reflecting their concerns back to them. And I guess what I found that we have to offer in that context is time and space to listen to people without cost. So that's what we offered for the first 2 years. And we offered that again this year. But this year we complemented it with something called the Jesus Deck. Now, the Jesus Deck is... this is the Jesus Deck. And they're not actually tarot cards, but they're designed to look like tarot cards. And they are, on them, they've got different kind of, so this one, for example, is number 1 from Mark, and it's just about the book of Mark. But most of them have a piece of text on them. So Mark 14, they were looking for a way to arrest Jesus by some trick and have him put to death. So these cards are basically like the four Gospels, when you open it up and you put your finger in. because we were kind of encouraging people to select a card. So, Johnny, do you want to pick a card? It's Christmas, so it's Luke. So what we do is we will get this card. We will talk about Luke, and Luke, the symbol of Luke is the ox. A winged ox is on the card. So we'll talk about an ox being patient and steadfast, and there's some good characteristics that are part of the ox. We'd then be able to tell the story about Christmas. We'd then tie in with some of the symbolism on the card. So on this card in particular, we've got a rainbow symbolising God's eternal promises that God has made to us. We've got the sun, which again can be a symbol for God. We've got the sky, sign of heaven. All these kind of things which we can tell people just through a card. And the idea is simply to be able to share the Christian story in a means which is culturally appropriate in that setting. And people loved these. They were coming up to us and asking us to, to take a card and talk through the Christian gospel with them. It was just a great way and a culturally authentic way to share faith in that setting. So that's what we did. And around us were a variety of other people. Next to us was Alison. And Alison has been next to us for the next last three years. I'll just find where I am. Alison is fantastic. She her story is she was quite a high flying business person, and then she discovered that she had cancer, and she was laid out. She was really quite ill. She was in a hospital. Fortunately, she got better. She was cured. And she says that during that time, she didn't meet with the angels. The angels met with her. I'll just find where I am. God. And what Alison does is basically she channels angels. An angel will appear to her in some form, and she will paint that angel, and then she'll deliver a message from that angel. So this is one which she has channeled. This is the angel Gabriel, and it's the bringer of life and of good and of gift. And she says, everyday angels have been sent to us to help us deal with the trials and the tribulations that get in the way of everyday happiness and well-being. So that's what Alison does. Now, a few years ago, she was quite excited when we got there, because she had just channeled this new angel, which she'd never come into contact with before. And this is a woman who has no Christian background whatsoever. She's never been to church, but this is the angel that she channeled, and this is the message that the angel gave her. The angel's called the light of the world. And the angel said to her, I am the light of the world. Look into my heart, and there you will find your true love. Is it not the most beautiful thing? Look into my heart, and I will bring you home. Look into my heart, and recognize that you have always been, that you have been there all the time, you within me, I within you, perfect and divine. And I was just quite touched by that. I was thinking, what is going on? Who has Alison channeled? And my question was, and this is another one for you to talk about, is has Alison channeled the angel of Christ? And if you've finished talking about that, how can we ensure that we don't sacralise the mind-body-spirit movement? So has Alison channeled the angel of Christ? They loved them. They thought it was fun.
Just after typing Jesus, that's a beautiful text. But after that, Reverend Ralph Moore, Jesus,
but
put my notes on top of the one. All right, if we could just round up where we are. Okay, people got any thoughts or any comments, particularly in regards to what's going on with Alison? And it highlights the complexity of what's going on, and it highlights, I think, that we shouldn't be outside saying this is all bad. We shouldn't be inside saying this is all great, this is the movement of God. We should be kind of prophetically criticising what's going on and affirming where God is doing things. Any other thoughts? It's kind of God is, isn't it? Always working to draw us close. Sacralise. Almost make sacred. Say this is the movement of God. I think it's in Transforming Mission. Bosch talks about sacralising the sociological forces of the time, saying that Christians sacralise modernity, perhaps they're sacralising post-modernity as well. We need to put a critical edge on that and on this as well. This is quite fun. You can buy at Mind Body Spirit Fair a board game called The Gift of Enlightenment. And The Gift of Enlightenment game is for up to 6 people. It's a unique and totally original board game that brings a flow of positive energy to all who discover it. You travel the circle of life, you harness the energy that surrounds you, you collect 7 chakra crystals, you delve into mysterious karma pools, you avoid false idols, and it's suitable for children over 14 and adults. So you can buy those at Mind Body Spirit Fair. You can also buy some of these. These are toe socks, but these weren't from Mind Body Spirit Fair, these were from Primark. At Mind Body Spirit Fair, I think this year it was £12 for 3 pairs, because they had a special kind of spiritual quality to them. I didn't spend enough time talking to a bloke to find out what, but at Primark they're £1. So you can buy all sorts of things there. I guess Alison was on one side of us, and opposite us was a rather scary man, but quite a nice man. He looked scary, called Julius W. Now, Julius W. is a healer. He's not a full-time healer. I think he is a partner in a law firm in London as well. So you can go and see him in the evenings and at weekends when he's not doing his full-time job. And he offers healing. It's about, I think it's £15 for about 10 minutes. And you lie on the table, and he kind of does that over the top of you. And is quite a well-respected and well-known healer. So well, he's been on Richard and Judy and everything. So he's quite well known. And I was looking on his website, and the way he says healing happens is that we connect with the universal love that is around us, that is above us, And gradually, we bring about healing through connecting with the universal love. Healing within the New Age setting is also about a balance of chi, of energy within the body. And it's also about getting that flow of energy right. So people may come to you, in a mind-body-spirit fair and say, my energy's blocked. So you have to pray with them and that will release the blockage. Or their chakras will be out of balance. And these are the seven chakras that people have. And if they're out of balance, then they'll be having a bad time with whatever. And there's seven which are kind of down the body. And getting these in balance means that you live a better life. Now, I just want to go back because there's something which I forgot, which is quite interesting, particularly in regard to the Jesus deck. And that is the role of Jesus within a mind-body-spirit fair and how people view Jesus. So what we need to understand is Jesus Christ as the Christian one, that Jesus Christ who we know, then there is Jesus and there is also the Christ. Okay, now the Christ is an interpersonal spirit which is run throughout the whole of creation and it's manifest at certain times in particular people. And one of these people was the person Jesus. And at Jesus' baptism, the Christ entered Jesus and Jesus became Jesus the Christ for that time that he was on earth. Other people have also been embodiments of the Christ are the Buddha, Zoroaster, I think I've got them written down somewhere, but there's five altogether within human history. So when someone, if you're in a mind-body-spirit fair and someone comes to you and starts talking about Jesus the Christ, it's very different from Jesus Christ. And hence, we can use the Jesus deck because of the kind of understanding that people have of Jesus. Now, Jesus is also viewed as an ascended master. Now, an ascended master is someone who's been on this planet and they've been particularly good. They've been like Jesus. They've been like Buddha. They've been like someone who's inspired humanity. And after they die, they ascend up to the higher consciousness. And they kind of, as part of that ascension, they give back their energy to the earth. So we can connect with the ascended masters through kind of meditation. And the ascended masters are always there to speak with us. And Jesus is one of those ascended masters. I'm just thinking what else I've got to say. Charismatic stuff. Okay, two different approaches within mind, body, spirit fair. There's the alt worship approach, which is what I've already described. The second approach is a more charismatic approach. And at Mind, Body, Spirit in Manchester, there's two Christian stands who are there, and we work together with friends and all that kind of stuff. There's us, and there's a guy called Stefan Dreis, who's a German chap, has been involved with leading churches in Germany, kind of quite kind of Pentecostal, charismatic churches. And what Stefan does is he's got a sign up above his stall which says Stefan Dreis, Prophet of God, Prophet of Jesus. And basically he'll come in and he'll pray with people, say he's full on, he'll be full on, say he's a Christian, say he believes in Jesus, and he'll pray for them and prophesy over them. Because this is a context where you can be so full on with your faith, it's absolutely fine, then Stefan gets away with it. You can do things in mind, body, spirit fairs that you can't do in other places. And prophecy is something which is really quite, people are just absolutely fascinated by it. At Manchester, there's a space which is probably about half the size of this room. And in that room, there's 24 people, so six rows of four desks. And a person sat at each desk. And one person's reading tarot, one's doing runes, one's doing sand reading, one's doing pendulum dowsing or whatever. And with it, and they have queues of people signing up to spend 15 minutes, costing 20 quid a go, with each of these people to have their fortune told. And it's just absolutely fascinating. People want to know the future. And prophecy is a real kind of key area where I guess Christians do have something to contribute. And I'm just so pleased that Stefan, who's confident in that area, feels that that's where his ministry is. Just runes, they're kind of Germanic stones which have got little inscriptions on them, and the person who's reading them will throw them and they'll come up in a certain way, and then they'll give you a reading from those runes. Sand reading is where you kind of shake some sand so it's level, run your hand over it, and the kind of peaks and troughs mean certain things. Pendulum dowsing is the whole kind of water finding thing, but they'll kind of hang a pendulum over you and your energy will make it swing in a particular way, and then they'll read that. So all these different ways of prophesying and kind of telling the future within that context. So there's all sorts going on, all sorts of opportunities. I'm wondering whether we've got time. I guess my biggest, the thing which I wrestle with the most in this context, these are people who've had their aura photographed, by the way, that's what it looks like. The chap said they had a pink aura, so that's what it looked like. The thing which I wrestle with most is I'll sit with a person, we'll spend 15 minutes chatting, I'll pray with them and have quite a kind of profound moving experience, pray for healing, about whatever. Then this person will get up and they'll wander along to the Reiki healer and they'll do exactly the same thing again. They'll then go to the psychic healer and they'll do exactly the same thing again. And I constantly wrestle with, should I be in this context? Am I selling out? Am I sacralising these forces? Am I selling out to consumeristic spirituality just by being there? Or are we offering something in that context? And that's what I wrestle with, and I would encourage you to wrestle with just for a few minutes. And I guess the thing which ties in is, how should we be prophetically criticising parts of this culture? And then I think we're going to have to close.